The following talk, entitled Healing Wholeness Here Now, was presented on the 14th of April 2024 by Reverend Julian Harvey.
So, as I said earlier, one of the sort of the sparks to understanding or coming up with the talk this morning was based on the Daily Word and really investigating what Paul was talking about in his absolute word about where or what, you know, what health really means and where it really comes from and the understanding of that. And, of course, that then started me on an investigation. And I have a great document that I was sent a while back, and it is available through Unity somewhere. I thought it was on Truth Unity, but I couldn't find it this morning when I was looking. But it's called What Unity Teaches, and there was a minister in the mid 70s, and I've now gone completely blank as to his name, and I haven't got it written down, so that's really good of me. He wrote a series of things about what Unity actually teaches in relation to things. And of course, one of them was what Unity teaches about health. And for those of us that have been around for a while, and anybody who's done any investigation about Unity at all, knows that Unity was originally built on a prayer ministry where Myrtle Fillmore would write letters. People would write into Silent Unity or write into initially Myrtle and into Charles had a magazine that he used to put out in the local area, and people used to write in from that magazine, and they would ask for people to pray with them about certain issues. And this is, sort of where Myrtle got into teaching about health, because she obviously did health properly, you know, the way she teaches it and the way she believes that health works, as a very practical example, as we all know the story of Myrtle, and I'm going to come back to Myrtle in a minute. But in the article that the minister talks about, and it was in my in the mail out on Thursday. So if you didn't get to actually read the mail out on Thursday, under What Unity Teaches About Health and Wholeness and Life, he states, healing is the activity of God governed by spiritual law or principle. So that matches what Paul talks about. Health is governed by spiritual law and principle. The principle or law governing healing has been stated briefly thus. Gotta love the language. And this is the statement. The healing principle is the true nature of God. Knowing the true nature of God, we know the true nature of man. By knowing his true nature, man is healed. End of quote. So he's obviously been doing a series of talks. So the next sentence kind of doesn't make sense because he's been doing a series of talks and it's all written in this particular article. But he says, the true nature of God, as you have already learned, includes perfect life. Perfect life cannot include destruction, decay, obstruction, overaction, or inaction. Man, as the expression of God life, cannot have these conditions either, even though his senses tell him, deceptively, that he does have them. Think about what I just said. Man, as the expression of God life, cannot have these conditions either, even though his senses tell him, deceptively, that he does have them. Now, where he gets this idea from and the concept that he gets this idea from comes from the biblical reference that's in Genesis, and it's after the creation process, and we all know about the creation process that we talk about in Genesis, hopefully talk about in Genesis. But then at the end of that, so Genesis 1 verse 26 states, then God said, let us make humans in our image, according to our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the air and over the cattle and over all the wild animals of the earth and over every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth. So if you've been studying Unity for a while, you know that The fish of the sea and the birds in the air and the cattle and all the wild animals of the earth and everything creeping over things that creep upon the earth is our thoughts. It's our consciousness. It's where we're at in a consciousness level. So with our higher thoughts, they're the birds of the air. So again, if we come back to the infinite field of potential and possibility concept, which is a newer way of saying divine mind, divine consciousness, and that divine mind, divine understanding, divine process, that process, pardon me, is an older version of who is God. So God, divine mind, now infinite field of potential possibility. That's sort of what's being, and for me, the infinite field of potential possibility opens my mind up more than the word God, for argument's sake. And that's about me. I'm not saying that you shouldn't, but for me, when somebody says the word God, it automatically puts a picture in my mind that to me doesn't really represent what I believe is actually happening, which is that divine field that gives us all the information and gives us the, is where we can access the information we need to have. When in the God concept that is in the Bible, he says that we have dominion, which means dominion means the care and understanding. So, and I know we've got bad examples in history of kings that have dominated society. We're talking about dominion, and dominion is more about caring and being looking after the people that the king or the ruler is caring for. So it's dominion is a word that has been often translated into being a bit more of a harsher circumstance. But the reality of it is that we do have dominion over our thoughts. We do control what our thoughts think. We do control what happens. We do control how we react to those thoughts. In various SEE subjects, we've got the Eye of the Storm coming up later in this year. And in the Eye of the Storm, he talks about the fact that, you have all this storm activity happening around you, and your goal is to stay in the eye of a storm. So it's the reference is to a cyclone. So when all this craziness is going on around you, pardon, craziness is going on around you, the goal is to stay centered, to stay within that, which means also centering your mind on what's going on. Meaning what's going on outside of you in that storm concept, but also what's happening on inside you. And then we have dominion over what we do with what's going on within us. So instead of operating on automatic pilot, we get to choose how we deal with any given situation. So it's a really important part of understanding what Genesis is talking about. The other thing is that verse 27 goes on to say that God created humans in his image. And in the image of God, he created them, male and female, he created them. So the original traditional concept of God is the male and female side. And of course, we've always, although it's a pretty simplistic way of looking at this, but that technically speaking, the female side is the intuition, the feeling nature, and the male side supposedly is that the what is it, the left brain side of things. It's the organized, the action, the doing, the physical. I don't know that I buy into that because I think, as me as a person, as a male, I certainly know I have feelings. Whether I can identify them at times is, well, not, is a different a different matter, but I know I have them. And when I was not involved in Unity, and when I was certainly during my drinking days, I certainly ignored the feelings and really only had frustration and anger. That's all I really had. And spent a lot of my time very angry. But I know that I have that feeling nature because I've been a parent. I became a father and I had my son, and there were a whole bunch of emotions and things that came out, nurturing emotions, emotions about, responsibility to the raising of a child. So, I know I have the male-female dynamic within me. And it's just terminology. When and I really wish I could remember the guy's name because he's a John something. Eh? No, it's not Butterworth. No, it's a gentleman I'd never heard of before, and it's a really good article, and I must make it available to you guys. He says after he talks about understanding that we have this ability, and then he talked about the biblical reference. He then says, and this is what I love. He says at the end, he says, so after God created humans, he created the image of God, he created them, male and female, he created them. And the gentleman says, see, this alone I found that God made human beings straightforward, but they have devised many schemes. Which means, and in metaphysics, I think it's in metaphysics four, we talk about the difference between personality and individuality. And personality is that framework that we take out there into the world. Individuality is the divine expression as me expressing in the world today. So we've designed all these different schemes that we have and these different aspects of ourselves. So understanding that, and I know it's talking about we've been talking about health specifically in this one. We've been talking about health because health is something that is often on people's minds for a variety of reasons. I saw a funny meme during the week, and the meme was a picture of a cow looking very confused out into the picture, and above it said, my mind thinks I'm younger than I really am. And then underneath it says, my body thinks my mind's an idiot. trust me, I know how some days how it feels. It's understanding that, we do have dominion over our thoughts, our mind, and our concepts. But that's not the full truth of what's going on. I don't know whether you guys have ever read what. So there's an actual document available on Truth Unity, written by somebody we know. I think her name's Myrtle. Not sure. And it's actually about how I found health. Okay. And she goes in the article, she talks about, what she actually did. Because one of the things that, and I don't know whether Myrtle got it first or Charles got it first or whether they got it, I can imagine their dinner table as a couple must have been an amazing dinner table where they talked about things and they must have had the most amazing conversations, I would imagine. But they really got an understanding that Christianity is all fine and good and Jesus is all fine and good and God's all fine and good, but unless you actually do something about it, it's all pointless. It's all just blowing in the wind, as a certain person sang. And so what Myrtle says is that she made a discovery, and she said, I was very sick. I had all the ills of mind and body that I could bear. Medicine and doctors ceased to give me relief, and I was in despair until I found practical Christianity. I affirmed my beliefs and I was healed. I did most of the healing myself because I wanted the understanding for future use. And this is how I made what I call my discovery. So what she did was she thought about life. She looked at life that was around her, and she grew up in a, they were in a farming community in rural Missouri. Kansas City was, had a little town, but it wasn't, the city it is today. And they lived, and they saw that, and she grew up on farms, and she grew up in areas where, there was life around her. And So she looked at that, and then she looked at that those animals and the birds and the insects and all of that sort of stuff were all just getting on with life. They were just getting on with what was there. And she wondered why the lot that life makes the body the way they make the body in those particular animals. So she got into thinking about how life, capital L life, is absolutely everywhere and it's in everything. And of course, coming back to divine intelligence, and divine understanding and divine mind, she realized that it requires that intelligence or that concept of intelligence and a body to make a life for humans. Okay. And it needed that. Now, animals have a certain level of intelligence, and so do humans. And she was saying they're different, and they have different capacities and different understandings of how things work. So she then moved on to that life is a form of energy, and that it's a form of a way of being, and that the energy is everywhere present, and that it's all part of that process. So then she says, it then flashed upon me that I might talk to the life in every part of my body and have it do just what I wanted. I began to teach my body and got marvelous results. So, when I first started back at Unity, because this is, Unity refreshed for me from a few years ago. When I started back at Unity, I always knew the concept that Myrtle had done a process where she talked to her body. There's lots of, stories out there about the fact that her prayer and meditation was actually her talking to her organs and talking to every part of her body. But this article tells us how she did that, and it's something to think about. So she said, I told the life in my liver that it was not torpid or inert, but full of vigor and energy. I told the life in my stomach that it was not weak or inefficient, but energetic, strong, and intelligent. I told the life in my abdomen that it was no longer infested with ignorant ideas of disease put there by myself and by doctors, but that it was all alive with the sweet, pure, wholesome of the energy of God. Now, if that isn't practically looking after yourself, I don't know what is. Okay. So she then goes on in the article to talk about, I went to the life centers in my body and I spoke words of truth to them, words of strength and power. I asked their forgiveness for the foolish, ignorant course that I had pursued in the past when I had condemned them and called them weak, inefficient, and diseased. I did not become discouraged at their being slow to wake up, but I kept right on, both silently and aloud, declaring words of truth until the organs responded. And neither did I forget to tell them that they were free, unlimited spirit. I told them that they were no longer in bondage to the carnal mind, that they were not corrupt flesh, but centers of life and energy omnipresent. So, when I read that, I kind of it threw me a bit because I knew that she had done this. And then I spent the next couple of days listening to how I talked about myself. And one of the challenges, as many of you know, I'm going through a few changes, both in my work environment and in my home environment. And I'm also going through some changes in my spiritual environment. And I'm thinking to myself, and I'm contemplating things, and I'm doing the washing up. And while I'm doing the washing up, I'm thinking things. That's when you do your thinking, I found that Closing my eyes and meditating while driving frightens the crap out of all the drivers around me. So I've stopped doing that. But at times, when I get into meditation and I think through that, and I'm no different from anybody else on the planet. When I go into meditation, the monkey mind takes off. All those thoughts happen. But for a little while, I wanted to listen to them. I wanted to see what they were saying to me and what was going on. And what I found was is that the negative thoughts were still all there, and they were still all trying to have their input. Now, as a side to this, completely different to this, at work, I'm putting together a package, a work package, a deliverable training package for the team leaders in a federal government department. So I work for federal government, right? And I'm putting together a package on how to train team leaders to be better team leaders and be more proactive and to build better teams and do all that sort of stuff. And as part of that, I had to look at and research an electronic, an e-learning package that came from LinkedIn Learning, and it was on emotional intelligence. So one of the things that we talk a lot about in understanding where we're at in work is looking at the emotional intelligence of the person and also the team as a whole. And what was really interesting was is that, and I've heard this before, and I think I've talked about this before, but I heard it in a really clear way. We have three parts of our physical brain where things happen. So they've done MRIs and they've watched the brain doing the things the brain does. And they have found that there are three specific areas, physical areas of the brain where things happen. There is that brain that belongs to us, and it's right at the bottom, and it has the amygdala in it, and it is what's known as it's where it's the primitive brain. It's the brain that we've had, sorry? Yeah, the reptilian. It's called reptilian, but there's another word for it as well. But it's that brain, that part of the brain where our automatic built-in fight flight response happens. So when we get into fear or when we get into anger or we feel threatened, it's that part of our brain that lights up and it says you've got to get yourself ready to fight or run away. What they have done studies in the last 15, roughly 15 years, they've done some studies, some further studies. But guess what? It's also where all our negative thoughts emanate from. Now, the theory behind this is when we were living in small tribes or we were living in caves and we were worried about danger and we were worried about what was going on around us, we were constantly looking for where the danger was going to come from. We were constantly looking at negative situations. Okay? So we were wondering, what's the next tribe over the hill like? Where are the dangerous animals? Where's the, and even to the point stage of my tribe is dying off because we haven't got enough food. Do we need to move the tribe? All that sort of stuff. And so as humans, we have developed as part of that fight or flight response. And there's another one, which is freeze. Freeze is where you don't know what to do and you're completely useless to, to yourself and whatever's going on in the situation. But it also is where negative thoughts, they're pretty sure that that's where negative thoughts get triggered from that fight, flight, or freeze response to what's going on. So what I'm saying to you is that negative thoughts come from an area that realistically you no longer need to use. So as humans, if we're in a dangerous situation where, for argument's sake, the building's burning and we all need to get out, and that fight, flight, or freeze response happens, yes, we need to use that aspect of our brain to help us with that. But then it goes to the next phase of the brain, which is the limbic, which is where all action happens. And the limbic is where we go, oh shit, the building's burning, I better get out. And that's where we need to action any of those negative thoughts that are coming in about whatever's going on. We need to engage our limbic brain and take dominion over those thoughts. Now, what's really interesting is Paul Hasselbeck, in his Heart-Centered Metaphysics, talks about stumbling blocks to demonstrating life, wholeness, and health. And the definition of demonstration is when life, wholeness, and health are realized and claimed in consciousness. So again, coming back to the brain, the limbic and the everything but the primitive brain, some call it the Jurassic brain, they call it all that, but that automatic fight, flight, freeze response, anything outside of that. And as we know, man has three phases of mind. We have the superconscious, the subconscious, and the conscious mind. The superconscious is really that infinite field of potential possibility that's everywhere present. And then the subconscious is where a lot of the automatic stuff happens within our brain that we need to get done, but it's also where we retain a large percentage of repetitive memory. So it's where we store some of that stuff. So we might have a reaction to something in our 30s or 40s, but what we're really reacting to is something that happened when we were 6 or 7. So a lot of that subconscious stuff is where a lot of that's all stored. And then, of course, the conscious mind is that one where I'm sitting in a room or sitting on Zoom listening to Julian, the sun's shining, the clouds are, you know, yada, yada. It's that conscious where we're consciously aware of what's going on. One of the things that Paul talks about in Heart-Centered Metaphysics is that, and demonstration, for those of you that have not been around uni for a while, demonstration is an older word where what we're really saying is that it's where we're practicing our practical metaphysics or our practical Christianity. It's where we're demonstrating, not to other people. It's like I'm not going to suddenly pull out Tupperware and show you how good it is. I'm not demonstrating that stuff. What I'm demonstrating to myself is that I have this divine guidance, this divine understanding, and I can use it in every day. So that's where I demonstrate it to myself. But Paul talks about in demonstrating, or the stumbling blocks to demonstrating, obviously is things like fear and the negative side is a stumbling block. But as I said, fear and the negative side is an automatic response from our primitive brain side of things. And we now have dominion over that. We are now at a point and stage where the immediate risk of whether or not, you know, a tiger's going to come and get you, or you're going to have to, you know, change, you know, move from Brisbane to somewhere else because there's not enough food, you know, all of that sort of stuff no longer really relates. Although, anyway, I'm not going to go into that one. Moving house is a whole new world for me. So Paul talks about the fact that it's about understanding the difference between attachment and non-attachment, and resistance and non-resistance to changing thoughts, and understanding how we then demonstrate from those perspectives. So attachment to the body and outer proof inhibits demonstration by hindering awareness of the oneness, life, and substance. Non-attachment allows the realization of divine ideas like life and substance. With as far as resistance and non-resistance is concerned, the key idea there is resistant to unwanted thoughts of sickness and disease hinder demonstration by actually increasing them in consciousness. Yeah, you know. Whereas non-resistance eliminates an oppositional attitude. So this comes back to when Charles Fillmore talks about when you have negative thoughts, you bless them and brush them away like you do with a feather, a cobweb with a feather. You just brush them away and go, okay, okay. Psychology and science has proven that for every thought, major thought of any consequence that you think and you concentrate on, your mind will create somewhere between 15 to 30 additional thoughts along the same vein. So when you concentrate on the negative thought, or you concentrate on the issue that's going on at hand, then you will have more of those things. That's why we find that when we're trying to think about changing an attitude, changing a belief, changing a thought, guess what happens? More of those thoughts come up. More of those things happen. Okay? So what we've got to learn is we've got to learn to understand about attachment and non-attachment and how to be non-attached to whatever's going on. Now, non-attachment doesn't mean we don't care. It just means we're not attached to what happens with that. Oh, okay, that's a thought. Excellent. Move on. Okay, move on, move on, move on. So one of the things, so I guess in understanding what I mean by all of this is that, and I know I'm talking about health, but this actually happens in every area of our life. It's not just about health. You know, we're more than just health. And the goal or the understanding or the tool that we can use as practical Christians or practical metaphysicians is understanding our awareness of what's going on and where that's coming from. So we often talk and we talk about when we pray for someone else, we don't pray on the condition or we don't pray on them getting better. We have to pray on the divine solution or the divine idea, which is they are inherently good, they are inherently healthy, they are vibrant. So coming back to, better try and find the right one. That's right, I don't need those ones. Thank you. I guess Myrtle puts it best at the end of her article, where she says, and she talks about father. Myrtle uses father mostly to talk about divine ideas, divine mind. She talks about the fact that to really get to the point of how do I work through a health challenge, or how do I work through a financial challenge, or how do I work through a relationship challenge? How do I work through, whatever's going on for you, is understanding that, one, you need to investigate or understand where the error thinking was coming from. The second thing that you need to do is you need to look at what are those thoughts telling you that are error thoughts that you need to resolve, change, or adapt, or move on from? You then need to look at developing strategies to combat when those negative thoughts start to become overwhelming, because they do. Sometimes, especially if you're dealing with a major health, major abundance, major issues going on. And so Myrtle then says in the bottom of the article, I then asked Father to forgive me for taking his life into my body and using it so wastefully. I promised him that I would never, never again retard the free flow of that life through my mind and my body by any false word or thought, that I would always bless it and encourage it with true thoughts and words in its wise work of building up my body temple, and that I would use all diligence and wisdom in telling it just what I wanted it to do. I also saw that I was using the life of the Father in thinking thoughts and speaking words, and I became very watchful as to what I thought and said. I did not let any worried or anxious thoughts into my mind, and I stopped speaking gossipy, frivolous, petulant, angry words. I let a little prayer go up every hour that Jesus Christ would be with me and help me to think and speak only kind, loving, true words. And I'm sure that He is with me because I am so peaceful and happy now. I want everybody to know about this beautiful true law and use it. It's not a new discovery, but when you use it and you get the fruits of health and harmony, it will seem new to you and you will feel that it is your own discovery. So I want to take you into a time of meditation now, if we can. Center yourself into that aspect of where you connect to self, to divine mind, divine understanding. And take this time just in the silence to bless your body. Think about your organs, your heart. Think about your heart pumping away, filling you with love, filling you with blood, filling you, moving everything around your body. Think about your lungs as you breathe, taking in the air from outside, oxygenating that blood that the body is pumping around, filling it full of goodness, filling it full of love, filling it full of life. And that blood moving around in through and as part of your body. Think about your stomach and your dietary system. Think about it accepting food through your esophagus, through your mouth, and turning that beautiful food that is prepared into the nutrients that again are going into that system of yours, feeding your cells, feeding your body with life. And that they're filling that life with love. Think about your muscles and the sinews that are holding your body upright or helping you walk around or physically doing things. Think about the blood vessels going into those muscles and creating a vibrant sense of energy as you move around. And think about your organs that eliminate things from your body, the amazing technology that you are within, utilizing the nutrients and moving them through the process. And then think about your brain, that organ in your head that has this amazing ability to do all sorts of amazing things. And that is the divine inspiration, the divine mind, always active in, through, and as your brain, helping your body each and every day. And in the silence, I just want you to take a few minutes to just bless every part of your body, from your toes all the way up through into your head, knowing that the Christ consciousness is in every aspect of your body. We do that in the silence. As we come back into the room, we know that we're all is well.